I have to start off this morning with my confession, an apology to those watching on the live stream. We still live stream this Mass, and I just told the service before we came out here an important life lesson: remember not to forget. And then I forgot to turn on the live stream. So you missed the opening hymn and the Gloria and the first reading, but you know what? It's okay to be late for Mass when you're watching from home, so okay. We're back in business. Maybe you've heard someone say it. Maybe you've said it yourselves. I am spiritual, but not religious. I remember once, not too distantly past, when someone very close to me said that as a means to justify why they were going to knowingly do something that was going to have long-lasting effects that was completely the opposite of what the rules of our Catholic faith tell us. I am spiritual, but not religious. That is the motto of the modern world, where religion has been relegated to nothing more than a set of rules, rules that many think are meant to oppress them rather than to free them. And where all of a sudden this spirituality, well, that's about relationship. So that's good. That's, you know, getting closer to God and other people without the church getting in the way. Spiritual and religion, those two things are meant to go together. And rules and relationships, you can't have one without the other. If your marriage didn't have any rules, you would no longer be married. If you thought it was okay to go home with anybody besides your spouse, if you thought it was okay to be closer to someone besides your spouse, you'd be breaking the rules of that relationship, and you'd probably both be going to seek out legal counsel and a judge for a bill of divorce. Yes, religion has rules, but that is to preserve relationship and spirituality, a relationship with God and with each other. These are the important life lessons that Moses was trying to tell the Israelites about in the Sinai Desert 1,100 years before the birth of Jesus. He was telling them, God has given us this law because God has given us life, a planet to live on, air to breathe, blood in our heart, air in our lungs, food to eat. Everything we have comes from Him. Everything we have belongs to Him. Everything we do should be for God's glory, honor, and praise, including obeying His commands. And Moses said, inasmuch as we obey God's commands, we'll have long life in the promised land. Inasmuch as we go our own way, always going around God or forgetting God, disobeying God or pretending there is no God or pretending we are God, then we won't have the blessing, we'll have the curse. He said, obey God's law, all of God's laws. Don't add to it, don't subtract from it. And he was speaking from experience. This is Deuteronomy. In the book of Numbers, we find Moses with that 1.5 million people that followed him across the Red Sea into the desert, and they're already complaining. The journey has just started, and he, like them, wants to turn back because he's tired of hearing all of their complaints. How hot it is during the day, how cold it is this night. We have nothing to eat, nothing to drink. In Numbers chapter 20, the people are dying of thirst, and they complain to Moses and God to give them something to drink. God tells Moses, take the staff of Aaron, strike the rock, and in that most unlikely of places, from the most unlikely of sources, millions will have their thirst slaked by water from that rock. Well, Moses did what the Lord commanded, but then, of course, he thought he could perfect on perfection, so he added to it. God told him, strike the rock once with that staff. Moses struck it twice, as if once wouldn't have been good enough. But if God is going to make miraculous living waters come from something that is not alive at all, that's His prerogative. He does not need Moses' help. He doesn't need Moses to counsel him on how he could improve upon it. There's a pretty stiff consequence, perhaps in our mind too stiff for the penalty. But God told Moses after that event, Numbers chapter 20, He said, you're going to continue to lead these people, not for 4 days or for 4 weeks, but for 40 years. You will lead them for 40 years. And he was 80 years old when that journey started. He was no spring chicken. But he said, you will lead them for 40 years. You will get to the banks of the Jordan. You'll be able to see the promised land across it. You'll be able to smell the milk and honey flowing from it. You might even hear the birds chirping in the trees, but you won't set foot in it. That was God's punishment of Moses because he decided to add to God's law where many other people were subtracting from it. He was going to fall short of the destination. He wasn't going to reach the promised land because he did not follow God. He would still have to lead others to the promised land, but he would not get to enter into it. That's an important lesson for us, especially if we want to be intentional missionary disciples going and announcing the gospel of the Lord. If we're not following, we cannot lead. Moses told the people, obey God's law. In the land I'm leading you to, where I don't get to enter, you'll not only enter into it, you'll stay there. But one of the reasons why the Old Testament is so much longer than the New is because in those 1,100 years between Moses and Jesus, they didn't do it. They did not remain faithful to that relationship with God. They didn't keep their marriage vows to God. And thus it was that they would be exiled and sent as slaves to foreign lands time and again, to Syria, to Iraq. Then there'd be the invasion from the Macedonians, then the Greeks, then the Romans, time and again. History kept repeating itself because they would not listen, they would not learn, they would not follow, and thus they could not lead. This story has been repeated throughout the centuries, where those people who have chosen to be spiritual but not religious, I don't have to obey those rules because I'm spiritual. Those are rules for thee, not for me. And how often this applies to the teachings of Scripture and the church. I can do whatever I want with whomever I wish. Nobody can stop me because I am God. I am the captain of my own ship, even if I sail it to the bottom of the ocean. Jesus was encountering some challenges with the law as well, especially with the Pharisees that he's debating with in the beginning of the 7th chapter of Mark. Why? Because Moses said, don't add to it. Don't add to God's law. Just obey what he tells you. And yet the Pharisees thought they too could perfect on perfection. Because in those same 1,100 years between Moses and Jesus, there was a lot more law added to the scripture. They started off with the laws from the Bible that we find in the book of Leviticus and the book of Numbers and Exodus. And those were the 613 laws of ritual purity by which every Jew was to be judged. But in that 1,000 years, the Pharisees, the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees, the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, and the scholars of the law, well, they kept adding to those 613 laws of ritual purity. Those were called the Torah. The commentary on the law that the Pharisees were adding up, that was called the Talmud. And by the time of Jesus, it was 6,000 pages in length. There was no printing press. People couldn't read, so they didn't have these laws. No one was helping them to memorize 6,000 pages worth of law. So everybody was sinning all over the place and getting into all kinds of trouble with those Pharisees who were keeping a list. And they were checking it twice. And they were checking to see who's naughty or nice. They were using that law that was given to keep Israel faithful to God and in right relationship with him and with each other. And instead of helping them to find the promised land and stay in the promised land by walking the narrow gate between those laws, instead, they were simply using that law to make people feel unlovable, untouchable, unclean. This instrument then of God's mercy had become a wedge and a weapon, thus proving what Pharisee means in Hebrew, separated ones. The Pharisees loved separation. They loved being separated from everyone as long as they felt they themselves to be in a much higher playing field than everybody else. They wanted to separate people from God. They wanted to separate people from each other, and they were justifying the laws to do it. That is why they're debating with Jesus about the disciples daring to eat without washing their hands. A cardinal sin then, even more so in the age of COVID. Don't you dare not wash your hands before you eat. But that Talmud, the 6,000 pages of additions to God's law, well, that got out of hand. If you were to sit down to eat a meal with a Jewish person in Jesus' time, you weren't just going to get a little bit of sanitizer. You weren't just going to wash the tips of your fingers. You were going to roll up your sleeves, and the Talmud insisted you start at your elbow and wash all the way down to the tips of your fingers, and you had to do it for a long time, and you had to do it more than once as if you were about to remove their spleen instead of eat their sandwich. It completely ran amok. And what purpose did that serve? How did that make person more clean in their heart, more pure in their soul? It didn't. And Jesus knew it. And probably the Pharisees knew it too. But if they could make other people do it, make other people jump through those hoops and damn them to hell if they didn't, all the better. Because they are the separated ones. And they want everyone else to be separated from God and from each other. That's why Jesus told them, stop worrying about your cup, your kettle, your jug, and your bed. Because what makes you unclean isn't what you're touching. It's what's in here. It's what's coming forth from here. It's your ability to hate where you ought to have loved. These rules were completely out of hand. How many times was Jesus or his apostles accused of doing work on the Sabbath? That was in those 6,000 pages of laws. You shan't do any work on the Lord's day. Well, we still teach that today. But these are some of the things. There's a list of over 100 things the Jews could not do on the Sabbath that counted as work. They were not allowed to thread a needle on the Sabbath. They were not allowed to light a candle on the Sabbath or to blow out a lit candle. They were neither allowed to knead the dough or to bake the bread. They couldn't tie a knot. They couldn't untie a knot. They couldn't cut their hair or someone else's. Women couldn't apply makeup, or I suppose some men as well. Nothing. Why? Because that counted as work. Ridiculous. Why would God be dishonored if somebody decided to light a candle on his day? We're lighting candles all the time in here. This was not law. This was power. And that's why the Pharisees were so threatened by Jesus, because he was going to take this all away from them. They thought that he was an outlaw to the outcast, and yet he said, I didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it with a new application. Love. That's what was missing for those Pharisees. Their hearts had turned to stone. They didn't have any love of God or their neighbor. The love was only for that law and how much power they could obtain by enforcing it. Jesus came to give power to the powerless, light to those in darkness, help to the helpless, hope to the hopeless. That law wasn't going to save anybody. God can, and Jesus is God, and he does save. Obey God's law. Don't add to it, don't subtract from it. We've seen the consequences of both. Moses thought Israel was pretty special. He said, there's no nation that has a God as close to it as we do because of the law he has given us. Well, we've surpassed that in the church because God has given us more than his word to guide us or his law to protect us and to govern us. He's given us the body and blood of his son in the Eucharist so that he can be one with us and we can be one with him. No, the law isn't going to save anybody. The law isn't also going to condemn anybody. It is Jesus who saves, and you will taste that salvation in about 10 minutes.